The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
And in the text that we read, you can open your Bibles there to Matthew chapter 6. And Pastor Ricky introduced this text to us last week, and we'll be in that text this week. I think we're moving on next week to another text, so a little two-part mini-series in Matthew 6 that's a part of a four-week mini-series here in the month of January. We'll do a little review, first of all. Last week, Pastor Ricky, in the first part of this text, recapped that he had one, that a disciple's treasure, the focus on that treasure, stop aiming your life at acquiring earthly wealth that you cannot keep. And two, aim your life at acquiring eternal wealth that you cannot lose. And if you didn't write those down last week, you can write them down now, or you can go online and you can listen to the sermon as Pastor Ricky unfolded that summary that disciples of Jesus steward wealth they cannot keep to acquire wealth they cannot lose. And as that is the first part of our text, leads us into where we're going to launch this morning, verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We are going to look this morning through the window into the heart of a disciple as it relates to this stewardship and the seeking of treasure and laying up of treasure, a window into the heart of a disciple. Last week, the focus was more on that treasure and where it ought to be focused. And this week, we want to turn the mirror and look at our own hearts to see where we stand to God's standard of a steward in our walk with Him. You know, when we read these verses, we understand that a lot of times Scripture uses idioms to help us understand what is said. And the idioms can be difficult. You know, I work as a volunteer in our ESL, English as a Second Language. Many of you are in this room. You're either a student or you are one of the teachers or helpers. And I was asked by my lead teacher, Debbie, to teach on idioms to our group. You know, you move to America, and English is your second language. You go to work, you have this work meeting, and the boss says, "Don't let the cat out of the bag." That can be very difficult, I can imagine. I didn't know we had cats in the office. We have cats in bags. What does that have to do with this marketing plan and this? I can understand it would be difficult when someone uses idioms that you can't relate to. And what we have in our text is actually an idiom that is used. It was well understood by the audience that Jesus was speaking to here on the Sermon on the Mount, but it's not always understood by us. And that's when he says that the eye, verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. So if the light within you is darkness, how deep is that darkness? The window into the heart of the disciple is the eye. The eye is the light of the body. And you can have a good eye, a healthy eye, or you can have a bad eye. And again, not understanding the idioms that are being used here, we would say, oh, we've got to have good eyesight. That if you are a good steward, you've got to get your eyes checked. I have 20/20 vision from a distance, but as an elderly man, I wear glasses really just because I can't see anything close. So you would say that I have a bad eye. I can't read anything without my glasses. Some of you have a degree of vision one way or the other, 20/20 or not, whatever. We say, well, I've got to have good eyesight. Well, obviously, Jesus isn't talking about the condition of our eyesight. So he's speaking about something else. Well, that's the idiom that he uses in verse 22 to describe and unpack the window into the heart of this disciple. The idiom is simply that the eye is the access, is what reveals. See, they believed in their culture that the eye brings in light what we see comes in, but like a window, it's also the other direction, that you can look into an eye and see what's inside the heart, just like you can look out of a window at home and see what's in the backyard, and you could stand in the backyard and look into the window to see what's going on in the kitchen. It works both ways, and that was well understood in their time. The eye went both ways. It not only saw, it also revealed. It showed what was within. And so when you would talk about the eye being healthy or the eye being bad, it would be that the eye is revealing what's inside. See, one thing to understand is the point is not that the treasure is the window to the heart. Well, sometimes we misunderstand that from this text. We think that, well, that individual drives a very expensive car. Obviously, his heart is not right. That individual lives in that certain part of town where you have to have a certain amount of money to live in and prestige. So they obviously, their heart is self-centered because they have wealth. See, the treasure's not the window. The eye is the window to the heart as it relates to the treasure. The eye. Now, you could look at the eyes of the person next to you, glance for one moment into the eyes of the person next to you. Sorry, Carl and Kevin, as you look at each other's eyes. What, you know, we all have different color eyes, don't we? I would say probably the majority of us in the room have brown eyes. How many of you have brown eyes? Yeah, probably the majority. And then there are the few, the minority, who have blue eyes. How many have blue eyes? See, we're scattered amongst the midst, the minority of the group, the blue-eyed individuals. Yeah, we have different color eyes, and there are some who would say, well, you could look in someone's eyes, and based on the iris and the pupil and its dilation, and you can see into their heart. Well, no, that's not what's being taught here. What's simply saying is that there is a way to get a glimpse inside an individual to their heart. Now, the first point that I'd like for us to understand today as we develop this, number one, is how you steward wealth reveals the condition of your heart. The window is how you steward that treasure. The stewarding of that treasure reveals the condition of your heart. Again, not the treasure, not the quantity of the treasure, but how you steward the treasure is a window used with this idiom or described by this idiom of the eye of the heart. Now, one thing, let's look in that text. We're talking about the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is healthy, technically that word is not healthy. I'm not saying it's not a healthy word. I'm saying the word is literally single. What it's saying is if your eye is single, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad or vicious, evil, your whole body will be full of darkness. Isn't it quite interesting, verse 24? No one can serve two masters. He'll either hate one, love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. Verse 24 talks about a singleness of focus. Well, back to the revealing through the eye, if your eye is single, it says healthy, but it's single, singularly focused. If in your heart you are singularly focused on what? Well, he tells us in verse 24, either money or God. You must be singularly focused upon God. Serve God. Service is the action. What we do, what we say, how we go about it. So if we are single on God in our service, then we have what would be called, translate, a healthy eye. Full of light. But if we are not singularly focused on serving God, rather we're serving money or we're serving self or we're serving this world or anything else, then our eye would be bad. Our eye would be vicious. Our eye would not be serving of others. Well, to understand that, we got to know what individuals were hearing. All through the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus refers much back to what we call the Old Testament, back to the law. Many things that the Jewish people of his day would be very familiar with. And he used phrases and he made references to things that they would be very familiar with. And so he did the same when it came to this section, when he talks about the eye. Let's go for a moment to Deuteronomy chapter 15. Deuteronomy chapter 15 in verse 9. Now I'm going to read this, first of all, from the King James Version, because the King James Version actually brings out that same use of the actual words without giving us the answer. Verse 9, "Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and thine eye be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him naught, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be sin unto thee." Using that phrase in Deuteronomy, during the seventh year, when they were to forgive the debts of those that were indebted to them in the Jewish community, in the Israeli community, they were also to give generously to the poor. Every 7 years, a year of rest, the poor would have rest to their poverty. Those in debt would have rest to their debt. All because God is a God of rest and deliverance from bondage. And so they were to model that in their life. And again, the phrase used, "thine eye be evil against thy poor brother." They knew, even in Jesus' day, what it meant to have an evil or bad eye. An evil eye was an idiom to say someone who was greedy and did not give to meet the needs of those who were poor. They were greedy and did not align themselves with the character of God when it came to rest and deliverance. A bad, evil eye was one who was greedy. Well, then you could jump over to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 9. Again, the King James says, "He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed." And again, in my Christian Standard Bible, it says, "A generous person will be blessed." The same idea. We've translated the idiom, but a bountiful eye, a single eye, a good eye is one who is very generous with what they have. And so the heart of God is reflected throughout the Old Testament when it came to particularly the seventh year. Those with an evil eye were greedy and were in sin, did not reflect the character of God. Those who had a bright eye were generous, and they were living out the character of God, celebrating God's act of deliverance and graciousness during that time. It was understood what a good eye and a bad eye was. So back to our text in Matthew 6. When Jesus says to them, when he talks about this stewarding, he says that you are to steward as one who has a good eye, not as one who has a bad eye. A good eye is what? It's singularly focused on God himself in his service. A good eye. Well, how do we go about having this good eye? Well, there's a second point that we want to add, that the disciple of Jesus will display the heart of a generous steward. So what we've seen so far in the text is that that stewarding our wealth is the window to our heart. A disciple of Jesus will display the heart of generous stewardship. Everybody stewards. Sometimes we mistake this, say that we need to be a steward. We all steward. We all steward everything we have. Some steward greedily, some steward generously. Some steward wisely, some steward foolishly. Some steward in order to gain more, some steward in order to serve God, that his kingdom on earth be done as it is in heaven. Regardless of how we steward. What Jesus is saying is that we need to move from just the simple fact of stewarding to say that disciples uniquely are generous stewards of what God has entrusted with them. Why? Because that reflects the character of God. Now, all through the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks a lot about disciplines. He talks about the discipline of prayer. He talks about the Christian discipline of giving to the poor earlier. He talks about fasting. He talks many times about these disciplines, that if you are a disciple, that there are certain disciplines that ought to be true in your life. Well, why do we need disciplines? Well, disciplines identify us. So these disciplines and how we're disciplined identify us as disciples of Jesus. These disciplines strengthen us as disciples of Jesus. And these disciplines are expressions of our hearts as disciples of Jesus. So the reason we ought to be involved in the discipline of prayer, Jesus said, here's how you ought to pray. The reason we ought to be disciplined in the Word, the reason we ought to be disciplined in fasting, the reason we ought to be disciplined in giving, the reason we ought to be disciplined in generous stewardship is because they all identify where our heart is, they strengthen us in our walk, and they are expression, they are a worship, they are obedience to the Lord that we follow. So when we as disciples are to live a disciplined life, it's because that's what we've been called to be. Citizens of the kingdom are disciplined. They're identified with Christ. They're strengthened in their walk with Christ. They're growing and they express, they worship as they follow their Lord. And so we've added, Jesus has added to these disciplines this generous stewardship. Now understand that for a moment. Disciplines don't save us from sin. Being generous as a steward is not what brings salvation from sin. Disciplines like generous stewardship aren't unique to disciples of Christ. There are some lost people in this world who are very generous with what they have. It's not exclusive. These disciplines have been given to us because we are disciples of Christ. And they reflect what God has done. And we make the mistake, even with stewardship, of separate. We departmentalize our lives. I've got my bank, my money over here, invested in this way. I've got my assets. I've got my health. I've got my body. I've got my spiritual. I've got my entertainment. We departmentalize our lives so much, particularly in our culture. But yet what Jesus is saying is citizens of the kingdom, there's no compartmentalizing between these two. There's no difference in how we steward our material things as there's no difference on how we steward those spiritual things. So think for a moment about stewarding the gospel. God has given to us his only son, freely gave his son to us so that we might have a relationship with him. Now we take that gospel and we need to be disciplined in how we generously steward the gospel. And so when he brings it down to this earthly treasures and how we generously steward, that is a discipline that demonstrates our heart and what God has done for us. Hey, I am as generous with what is spiritual, and I'll show you how generous. I'll be generous with what is material. There's no difference. There's no two standards. Be generous with the gospel, yes, but be stingy and greedy with material things. No, Jesus is saying that this ought to be a character of your whole life. That you generously steward everything that's been given to you, whether it's physical, material, whether it be spiritual, whatever it may be. And so with that delivered to them and their responsibility to be these generous, we need to understand then generosity compared to greed. It's again the bad eye. Bad literally means vicious. It means there's another person involved. I think of dogs. The nicest dog, the sweetest dog. Our puppy, Cappy, is so sweet and fluffy. But she's greedy. Your dog, as sweet, as trained they may be, they're greedy. Dogs are, they have bad eyes. They're vicious. If there is my recently made grilled cheese sandwich, and I make it, and I put it on my plate and go to the table, and then I'm going over to get my Diet Coke and my Fritos to eat my lunch. Yeah, I'm retired now, so that's what my life is. It's grilled cheese sandwiches and Fritos and a Diet Coke for lunch, because Bonnie didn't retire. She's still involved with life. So I put my sandwich on the table. When I come back with my Diet Coke, there's an empty plate, and there's no dog. Because when my dog got tall enough and she realized she could reach what was on the edge of the table, she's greedy. She viciously took my sandwich. And when I tried to retrieve it, she viciously protected it from my succumbing it. And once I did, I didn't want it anymore, so I just gave it to her and had Fritos and Diet Coke for lunch that day. Dogs are greedy. Do you realize all animals are greedy? even humans, are naturally greedy. But God created us different than the animals, where God said to us, as my disciples, as my people, I want you to be generous, not greedy. Not viciously protecting for self, but open-handedly offering to others, because you're different than the rest of my created world. God made us in his image. Generous stewardship, again, is an aspect of being created in the image of a God who is generous in how he relates to us, different than the rest of this world. Now, you can train a dog. Brad trained his lab, I think it was a black lab, right, in college. He trained his dog to go to the fridge and bring him a Diet Coke while he was in college, right? That is a gracious, generous dog. He would go get a drink and bring it to Brad. No. That dog was beaten into subjection. He was manipulated. He was trained to act generous, but in the heart of your dog, Brad, he was still a greedy lab. See, we can't separate. We can change behavior, but what's the heart of the matter? The heart of the matter that he is saying is that I have called you to be generous as you steward what I have given to you, because we have a God, we're part of a kingdom with a Lord who is generous in what he has offered to us. Well, again, even the natural. You know, my only grandson, the youngest of my grandkids, he'll be two soon. He decided to start terrible twos a little early. And he's got one word down, me. Me. And I think he's learned it because the rest of his family is always saying, give it to me. Give it back to me. Give it to me. Because he's after everything. If it's shiny, if it's new, now what he'll do is he'll say, me. He'll see a ball and he'll say, me. He sees me and he says, me. He wants the attention. Again, naturally, we want it for ourselves. But God has said, what I want you to do is be generous. What's the word generous? Well, just as greed is a closed hand for self, generous is open spirit. Literally, the word used in Scripture for generosity is open spirit. An open spirit, an open heart, open hands. That if I were to take all the material things that I have, and I would put it in open hands and offer it out, it's easily for others to receive. But if I take the things that I have and I hold them close-fisted near to me, or I put it away, or I build yet bigger barns so that I might put away my material things for my own security, see, that is defined as greed. God is saying the heart of a disciple is when we are open-handed with what God has entrusted us with. Because as we're open-handed with what God has entrusted us with, we are demonstrating the very character of the God who gave it to us. See, we recognize with our open-handedness that I didn't procure it. God gave it to me. I can't secure it. Moth and rust will destroy it. But God can secure it. I can't control it. But the one who did procure it, the one who does secure it, is the one who will control it. In fact, in Jesus' teaching, he went on to, following verse 24, this illustration of the birds and the flowers. Don't worry about tomorrow, because God will provide. He goes on to describe the reality that it's God who procures it, it's God who secures it, it's God who controls its distribution. He is the one who oversees all of that. So as a steward, if I have those things with an open hand, I'm responding to God with what he has truly entrusted me with. You know, all through the Sermon on the Mount, God keeps talking about what he will give us. You know, when he was talking about those who go into the temple and they drop money in the pots for the poor, you know, those who do it very showingly, very loud, make sure everybody hears all the coins falling into the clay receptacle. Why? Your reward is here. But if you give in secret, your reward will be in heaven. Those who fast openly, your reward is here, but I have a reward for you beyond. Jesus talks all through this Sermon on the Mount about those, there are those who receive their reward here, but you as my disciples, if you steward generously, I have a reward for you elsewhere. Well, even in the same context, we'd have that true about this generosity. What is our reward for generosity? Well, one, generosity is rewarded by freedom from worry. See, this whole example about the birds of the air, we understand it's true. That if I didn't procure it, and I don't control it, and I don't secure it, and it's not mine, when it is gone, I don't have to worry about it. That we understand that freedom from worry is a gift of God. Again, we don't naturally cease to worry. We're concerned about our tomorrow. But God gives us something. He gives us peace. He gives us confidence. In fact, in 1 Timothy 6, verse 6, it says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Philippians 4, 11 through 13, I've learned whatever state I am therein to be content. You know, sometimes we think that, well, if I'm a great generous steward in this life, I'm demonstrating the character of God and his generous ways, and that's good. And when I'm in heaven, I'll have everything. I'll have streets of gold. I'll have mansions. I'll have all these things. In heaven, I'll have the material things that I'm holding loosely now. But that's never taught in Scripture. We're never taught that we'll get something in heaven that we're not getting now. But what we're taught is that I will reward you in the way that I will reward you. In fact, part of the heart of a disciple who is generous in their stewardship is that God gives them peace and contentment. Again, that's a gift from God. We're not naturally peaceful and content. God gives us a heart of contentment. In addition to godliness, with contentment, there's great gain. We receive from God contentment. Now, contentment, you know, it's hard, you know, it's easy to think of contentment as, okay, I'm okay. It's okay. It's okay. I know it's miserable, but it's really okay. Now, contentment really looks back. It looks today. It looks tomorrow. Contentment can be best understood looking past as gratefulness. God gives us a heart of gratefulness. I'm content with my past. I'm grateful. Now, I'm not glad for everything that happened. I'm not glad for every struggle I had. But I'm grateful when I look back to see the hand of God throughout everything that's happened. God gives us a heart of gratefulness. Because you know what we naturally do? We look back and we're focused on what we didn't have. We're focused on what we failed to get. We're focused on all the things that fell short of what our goals were. That is not a heart of gratefulness. A heart of gratefulness focuses on what God has given me. That's contentment as I look back. That is a gift from God that he's promised to those who are generous stewards of what they have. You know, I may not have kept what I thought and wanted to keep, but I am so grateful for what God has done in my life and how he's provided. Well, contentment also looks at the plate. Looks at what we have on the plate ahead of us. My today. You know what we naturally do? I focus on all the things I don't have today. I don't have enough time. I didn't get the recognition I was hoping for. The markets didn't respond as I was hoping for. And this didn't happen. And my team didn't. And we're focused on what didn't go right. But what God is saying is I will give to those a contentment for today that I look at the plate and instead of saying, where's the beef, as a little lady in the Wendy's commercial, I look and say, oh, but look at what God's given me. Look at my family, and look at this, and look at my church, and look at my relationships, and look at all the things that God has given to me. I am content because I'm focused on what God has given me. I'm not discontent because I'm focused on what's missing. And then this contentment has a future look. Tomorrow. Are you afraid and worried about tomorrow? Are you confident that the same God to whom you're grateful for yesterday, the same God with whom you're content and at peace with today, is the same God who will show up and handle your tomorrow? And so I can have confidence and I can have hope and I can have peace for tomorrow because we have a gracious, we have a generous God. And his whole description of the birds of the air and how they don't worry about what they're going to eat and drink, and they're not worried about their feathers, their coats, their clothes. They're not worried about that because God handles it all. For them, it's instinct. But for us, it's a gift of God. Now, I say in bringing this together is that we need to understand, in a summary, to see that disciples of Jesus are generous stewards that display the generous blessings of God. The heart into a steward is when I look into our heart, when I look in my own heart, And I say, I am following a discipline that says I'll receive everything God has given me, and with open hands, I'll be generous. Whomever God decides will have it, whomever God brings in need, wherever the call is there, I am open-handed with everything I have. Why? Because my God has been generous with me. And so I will be generous with what he gives to me, because I am a disciple. And this is a window into my heart. Why are we generous? Because God is generous. Why am I disciplined? Because I'm a disciple that seeks to demonstrate who I follow and why I follow. Yes, God would call us to have good eyes, be generous as we seek to reflect who he is. You know, when we come to this Sunday, as we do every other Sunday, we come to the Lord's table, and it's appropriate we do that today. It's a perfect picture of what we're called to do. Because as disciples who are disciplined and are generous giving and are open hands, it reflects a God who so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever receives him, whoever, open, generous hope that God has offered to us through his Son. And his Son, when he came as a lamb to the slaughter, open-handed, not defensive, willingly laying himself, giving his all, giving everything, his life. Why? So that we might receive. That we might receive deliverance from sin and the consequence of sin and the judgment, the wrath of God. That's the God we follow. So how can we in this life demonstrate that? Well, one simple way is how we offer the material things we have, how we offer the words we have, how we offer our time and our service, how we steward everything is a reflection of what God has done. So how do we celebrate this? Well, we could take an offering and we could say, let's all be very generous today, or we could look at the one that we reflect, God, his Son, Jesus Christ, who offered his blood and gave his body for the atonement of our sin. The reason we're called to be disciplined is because of what God has done for us. So how can we celebrate our calling to being a part of his kingdom? We can reflect that through partaking in worship of the Lord's Supper today.